talking about meatloaf.
Meatloaf.
So moist and savoury, it's beef that's shaped like bread. Don't know what that aroma's doing in my head.
So who loves meatloaf? Who doesn't? This show is for you. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. We are going to talk about the appeal of this classic comfort food and some new twists on this old favorite. And yes, we will share tips on making a perfect meatloaf. What's a perfect meatloaf in your estimation? What makes it perfect? Is it the ketchup? Is it the vegetables, sautéed vegetables? Is it bacon? How about no meat at all? Have you ever heard of a meatless meatloaf? Well, you know what? I made one yesterday. I'll tell you all about it. And we will welcome your questions for our two guests and some of your favorite tips, too. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Very happy to have with us two guests who are actually writers, and they both share a love of meatloaf. You will recognize their names, I'm sure. Frank Bruni is the author of three best-selling books. He's an op-ed columnist for the New York Times. He has worked as the newspaper's chief restaurant critic, Rome bureau chief, and White House correspondent. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. I'm very good. Thanks for being with us. Also with us is Jennifer Steinhauer. She is a veteran New York Times correspondent, a passionate home chef, and author of the best-selling cookbook, Treat Yourself, and they are co-authors of the new book, A Meatloaf in Every Oven, Two Chatty Cooks, One Iconic Dish, and Dozens of Recipes, from Moms to Mario Batali's. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning.
It's great to have you both with us. Well, I will tell you about my failure in a few minutes, but I would like to just figure out how you two got together on writing a book on meatloaf. It's interesting. How did you come to know that you shared this love of meatloaf, Frank?
Oh, well, you know, Jennifer and I have been colleagues at the Times for many years, and we both knew we were food lovers. And when I was restaurant critic, Jennifer would sometimes come out to eat with me. She then moved to L.A. from New York, and when I would go to L.A., Jennifer was always my main eating partner. And so we talked about food all the time. Jennifer will tell you she's a much more accomplished home cook than I am, but my fledgling efforts in the kitchen seemed to center around meatloaf, so we began swapping recipes for meatloaf and realizing that even before we embarked on the book, we had a much kind of broader, more elastic and more inventive idea of meatloaf than was the kind of norm.
Well, I thought that was funny when Jennifer, you asked Frank if there's anything he was good at, and apparently when he said meatloaf, you agreed, and because you are also in meatloaf love.
I do love meatloaf. Usually when you talk to people about meatloaf, they have one of two reactions. My mother's meatloaf is the best, or my mother's meatloaf was disgusting and made me hate meatloaf. And then we have to turn them. So those are the two standard reactions. I'm sort of an outlier. My mother didn't make meatloaf. My grandmother made it, and I sort of enjoyed that. But I like to make meatloaf with my children because it's something, obviously, that can feed your family, which is sort of the genesis of why meatloaf became so popular in our country, a way of stretching protein. And I like to do it because it's an easy weeknight meal. And I was very surprised to learn that Frank, who was such a sophisticated eater and had eaten all the great restaurants in the world, also loved to eat and make meatloaf. And he does make not only one, but an impressive array of meatloaves.
That is so great. Well, I will say that my mother made meatloaf. She was not a very good cook overall, but I could eat her meatloaf. So but I haven't had meatloaf in quite a while because I am actually I'm a pescatarian. I'm a vegetarian plus fish, and
well,
we have
loaves for you, Joy.
I know, and in fact, I made the tuna melt loaf yesterday.
Wonderful!
And it wasn't bad, but it was dry. So what did I do wrong?
Well, you put your cannelli beans in, right?
Yes,
did
I did.
You have a little bit of the juice from the beans too?
I did not, because it said drain, and I thought about that. It said I thought it said drain and rinse them, so I did, and I think it would have been better if I would have left them full of that that juice.
That could help you, and then you definitely put the cheese on top, right?
Yeah, but it needed more. Everything needs more cheese.
Yeah, maybe that is the key. Maybe you need a little bit more cheese for yours to have it be the consistency you want. And also, you know, that loaf does not have to cook very long because, of course, you're using, you know, pre-cooked tuna, you're using canned tuna. So that a little shorter time in the oven, maybe?
I think that's it. It did go over. I'm used to overcooking things. But, you know, it wasn't bad. It was the first time I've ever had a tuna melt loaf like that. And I thought it was a lot of fun, and it sounded like maybe it was you, Frank, who says that a way to eat that tuna melt loaf was just stand over the counter and dig into it with your fork.
That's actually Jennifer.
Oh,
the tuna melt loaf illustrates something that both of us feel is a really fun aspect of meatloaf, and was a lot of fun in doing the book, which is you can take so many dishes or sandwiches or, you know, things you love food-wise, and you can so easily and ingeniously adapt their flavor profile to a meatloaf. So, you know, Jennifer developed that recipe, you know, and it evokes a tuna melt sandwich. We have in the book a buffalo chicken meatloaf that when you eat it, you really put immediately in mind of a buffalo chicken wing that you drag through blue cheese, because the meatloaf has blue cheese. We have a taco meatloaf that uses crushed tortilla chips instead of breadcrumbs. And when you're eating that, you really are immediately put in mind of a hard-shelled beef taco. And meatloaf, because it is the combination, the amalgam of so many things, it can be a sort of imposter, a sort of the Meryl Streep of entrees, we call it. It can take on all these foreign accents. It can really impersonate just about anything.
So, Frank, I mean, is that why you find meatloaf so special?
Well, I find it special for that reason, yes, because you're talking about, you hear meatloaf, you think of one thing, and in fact, meatloaf is so very, very many things, and every culinary tradition has a meatloaf or something that is essentially its cousin, just like it. But I also love it because if you are a bashful cook, as I was for a long time, and to some extent still am, there's something about meatloaf that is approachable. It gets you past being intimidated by recipes, it gets you past your fears. There's something about the fact that it's best mixed with your hands, and it brings to mind child's play and Play-Doh and that sort of thing. There's something about the fact that it is sort of forgiving. It's not like pastry, which if you don't put the exact right ratios in, it's not going to rise or have the right consistency. Meatloaf invites you to feel at ease in the kitchen, and I think that's the main reason I love it, because it takes anxiety out of cooking for anyone who has any anxiety.
And you touched on it, Jennifer, a little bit earlier, but where or when did meatloaf get its start?
Well, meatloaf is something that is, to some degree, served in a lot of different cultures, so we don't know its precise start, because it could have been something, you know, really centuries ago in a different food ways. But in the United States, it really took off as a central sort of component of the American table post-war, when people were trying to stretch their protein and trying to create both ease and expansiveness to the table. You know, this is a period when ease in the kitchen became primary. It's opening cans rather than chopping things and mixing things as quickly as you can, and just getting a big staple out of few ingredients and little effort, which in some ways I think has contributed to what can be meatloaf's bad reputation. An example of that, I would say, is that most standard conventional American meatloafs, which tend to be ground beef and ground pork, and sometimes the addition of ground veal, a third of each is the most classic, would often have a lot of raw onions and raw peppers in it, which has a kind of a consistency that some people don't find attractive. So Frank and I feel really one of the most important things to have in a successful meatloaf is to saute your onions first and to saute your other vegetables, which really is the first step in elevating meatloaf from this kind of dish that we think of as this sort of 50s almost joke food.
That's another thing I did wrong with my recipe, the tuna melt loaf, is my husband can't eat onions, so I didn't saute anything. And I did throw in a little celery in there, but maybe the sauteed onions would have given it a little bit more moisture, too.
Absolutely. That's a staple of every meatloaf.
I know. He just, for some reason, it upsets his tummy, so I try to avoid that, which is hard to do because it's in everything. Onions are in everything. How about, Frank, why do you think Americans have embraced meatloaf the way we have?
Well, you know, for some of the reasons Jennifer just mentioned, I think meatloaf, for many decades, when people were, I mean, we now live in a very foodie moment where at many different rungs of the economic ladder, people are more sophisticated in the home kitchen. They're more sophisticated in their understanding of food. They're more discerning, in many cases, about the exact nutritional qualities of everything they're eating. But if you go to the 50s, 60s, 70s, I mean, meatloaf was something that, in a very efficient and economical way, combined almost the entire food pyramid. You know, you had your starch in there, you had your protein, you often had vegetables, and I think people found that very, as I said, kind of efficient and economical and approachable. I don't think, I mean, this is where Jennifer and I come in, I don't think Americans love meatloaf nearly enough. You know, what I noticed during my time as restaurant critic for the Times, and what I've noticed as a kind of committed, enthusiastic restaurant goer, is over the last 15, 20 years, one of the great stories of dining out has been serious cooks, chefs, embracing and reinterpreting simple comfort foods, the hot dog, the hamburger, fried chicken. There's a huge fried chicken craze. I think the meatloaf is the one iconic comfort food that hasn't yet in restaurants really gotten this attention. And we sort of hope with our book that we give meatloaf its moment in the spotlight. Meatloaf, the dish, I should hasten to add, not meatloaf, the singer, who has had his time in the spotlight.
We have a listener on Facebook who made some sort. I will do anything, but I won't do that, or something kind of making a joke on the meatloaf song as, you know, saying that he didn't really want to eat meatloaf. But I think that he has not eaten the meatloaf that you can find in the book, A Meatloaf in Every Oven, Two Chatty Cooks, One Iconic Dish, and Dozens of Recipes from Moms to Mario Batali's. And we are talking with the co-authors. We are talking to those two chatty cooks. They are with us to talk with you about meatloaf and what makes a great meatloaf. And do you love meatloaf? Or are you like our guest? Do you think it deserves a little higher elevation than it has had? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking about home cooking, meatloaf in particular, talking with our two guests who are with the New York Times, Frank Bruni and Jennifer Steinhauer. They are the co-authors of the book, A Meatloaf in Every Oven, Two Chatty Cooks, One Iconic Dish, and Dozens of Recipes. And we are getting their thoughts on meatloaf, this classic, and how to make the best meatloafs possible. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. A listener on Facebook, Charles, says, I am mostly vegetarian with an exception. I can't give up on bow hunting. So I eat venison that I've harvested, and I don't mind using eggs as a binder. I like meatloaf as a medium for preparing deer. How do your guests feel about venison loaf? And any yeah, go ahead. In fact, I know you have a recipe in here from another famous Wisconsinite.
Another bow hunter.
Yeah, that's right.
House Speaker Paul Ryan was kind enough to share his venison recipe with us, and he, in fact, does, of course, is a very famous deer hunter, and he does grind his own meat out where he keeps his where he has his deer blind. And he told me that in his house he does the cooking and his wife does the dishes. And one of his recipes that he likes to do is with his deer meat, with his venison, is a venison meatloaf. It does in fact involve eggs, as most meatloafs do, but it's pretty much the quintessential venison recipe. If you like venison, I think you would enjoy that loaf. When I would also mention that we do have several vegetarian loaves, including two that were developed by chefs. We have a lot of chef recipes in the book, and so you can work your way through that as well.
Yeah, and he does want to know any innovative ideas for seasoning his venison loaf. Any thoughts on that?
Well, it's funny because this recipe uses sort of the classic onion soup mix, which, as you know, is sort of the staple of the American old-fashioned classic meatloaf when you use beef. So I think it's interesting, though, any seasoning that he would normally use in venison, he can adapt right to the loaf. That was what Frank was talking about earlier, and he was saying that anything that you can picture as a dish that you make with protein can be translated with binders into the proper pan, or the proper shaping, as it were, into meatloaf.
Well, you know, we have Mike and Racine with us, and boy, you know you're in Wisconsin when we have another hunter who likes venison loaf. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Like was described there, when I'm fortunate enough to get a deer, I do my own butchering, and of course there's always bits and pieces that are trimmings, and when we grind those up, whether it's for meatloaf or anything else, there's an inexpensive option for bacon, which is bacon ends. It's basically ends and trimmings, and a lot of supermarkets it's half the price of your regular sliced bacon. And I add bacon into the grind as I'm grinding the venison. And I use more of the fat than the meat because I'm not looking to get an overall bacon flavor as much as just a little bit of smoky flavor and then the fat, which venison doesn't have. And then the rest of the, at least for the meatloaf recipe, the rest of the recipe is pretty standard. I do lightly saute the onions, but I really want to keep as much of the onion character in it because I want that also to add to the moisture. But it's pretty standard onions, and I don't do the onion soup mix, just salt, pepper.
Well, thank you very much, Mike.
And sounds fantastic, yeah. And I like this bacon ends tip for other meatloafs. You know, some people eat turkey or chicken meatloaf because they don't want to eat red meat. But I think if you were looking at another protein, a chicken or turkey, that could be that you don't mind flavoring with some pork fat. I think that sounds like an excellent idea for other meatloafs as well. It's a really great tip.
What Mike is saying brings us to a crucial point, which is that if you're using lean meats when you're making meatloaf, you're going to have to make some adjustments. You're going to have to really kind of think about that, because if you don't have a certain fat content, which Mike is adding in with the bacon fat, you do run the risk of a very dry loaf. And so for that reason, in the book, we have a bunch of poultry meatloaves. We always recommend that if people can find dark meat ground turkey, which is pretty easy, or if they can get dark meat ground chicken, which is a little tougher, but if you go to a butcher and you ask him to grind him or her to grind thighs, drumsticks, you can get it. Makes an enormous difference in your poultry meatloaf.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Mike. In fact, speaking of Speaker Ryan's venison meatloaf recipe, you were recently featured in the New York Times on your book talking about that maybe our love of meatloaf could bind the nation, is the title here. Is meatloaf bipartisan, Frank?
Well, yeah. No, I mean, the funny thing is we have such a hard time in this country now and over recent years, as all of us know and as all of us lament, getting people from opposite parties to agree on anything, to converse amicably, et cetera. And yet when we were doing this book, and when Jennifer, who is the chief congressional correspondent for the New York Times, when she was talking just in the course of her general work with various lawmakers, and they would mention or would come up that she was doing a meatloaf book, both Republicans and Democrats said, oh, I have a recipe I'd like to give you. And they knew that their colleagues from across the aisle would be in the book, but the meatloaf brought them together in a way that an omnibus spending bill never could.
almost like the Green Bay Packers.
And building on that idea, you know, and Frank, I think you would agree that food has been politicized in our culture as a way of signifying, as a class marker and signifying things about people. You know, latte swilling, Chardonnay swilling, we're supposed to know what that means. We'll talk about Cracker Barrel America versus Whole Foods America. And I think that's another place, in all seriousness, where meatloaf really does bridge that gap nicely. You can go high with meatloaf, you can go low with meatloaf, you can use all different kinds of protein, you can do lows with vegetarians, you can do something that doesn't seem to have these cultural signifiers that have been so divisive in some ways.
I think what we're realizing here, Joy, is if we could just turn the U.S. Capitol into a giant meatloaf, our problems would be solved.
The dome could be mashed potatoes, Frank.
Yes.
I'm loving it, with freedom on top, yes.
And actually, that New York Times feature also included President Trump and his love of meatloaf, and apparently he and his wife Melania have made meatloaf sandwiches on Martha Stewart's show.
So and probably, and let's be real, Joy, probably only on Martha Stewart's show.
There we go.
Could be either Trump spending an enormous amount of time in the kitchen. I myself do not.
Probably not.
But he does have a meatloaf on the menu at Mar-a-Lago, which he has proclaimed to be the greatest meatloaf that exists.
And this deserves a lot of attention, Joy, because you may have noticed about President Trump, he seldom says anything about himself is particularly great or amazing or wonderful.
Right, so it's not going to be the worst one, I'm sure.
About his meatloaf, we have to perk up because it's so out of character.
Well, we have so many callers. Let's go back to the phones. Jacqueline in Milwaukee. Hi, Jacqueline.
Yes, good morning. My voice is a little bit going here, so I hope you hear me okay.
Yes.
One for Joy, a friend of mine in Eau Claire, she makes a delicious nut loaf with fresh mushroom gravy.
Yum.
It's just a wonderful vegetarian alternative.
Sounds good. What do you like, though?
For me, one of the things I like to do, and this comes from my mother, is because I live alone, I can't use a whole meatloaf. So what I like to do is I make up a meatloaf mix, form it into hamburger patties, freezer patties, and then when I'm in the mood for meatloaf, I pull it out and either broil it or fry it, and I got me a patty of meatloaf.
Hey, a meatloaf hamburger patty type thing. How about that?
Jennifer, tell them about you have a tip for making meatloaf that actually kind of dovetails with what the caller was just talking about.
I do. I also want to suggest to the caller that you can freeze a meatloaf, obviously, half too, and cut that up during the week if you want. It'll be beautiful sandwiches all week long. But, you know, you're bringing up this interesting issue with the patty. So one thing, when you make your meatloaf batter, as we call it, when you've got everything all ready to go, before you put it in your loaf pan, or as Frank and I actually prefer, on your cookie sheet or your cast iron or whatever vessel you're going to use to cook your meat, we like to put together a quick little tiny slider, if you will, a little tiny mini hamburger, and we fry that up, and that gives us a little quick taste, a little preview of the meatloaf to make sure it's properly seasoned before we get it all in the oven and bake something that is, you know, under-seasoned or not quite right. Good tip for readers, for listeners.
Yeah, thanks very much.
The other thing that that the comment about the burger shows is, you know, I mentioned earlier there are a lot of different forms meatloaf takes. There are a lot of things that meatloaf is related to. And, in fact, if you look at recipes for meatballs, in many cases they're very, very similar to recipes for meatloaves. I mean, with a meatloaf, because it's larger, you may have to add some binder. But every meatloaf every meatball is essentially a meatloaf waiting to happen. It's like a, you know, like a sapling is to a tree, a meatball is to a meatloaf. If you go to the Middle East and you think about kebbeh, which are those, you know, triangles or rectangles depending on the country of ground meat and pine nuts and cracked wheat. I mean, that's essentially all the components of a meatloaf. It's just in a different shape and a different size.
Let's go to another caller, Carol in the Twin Cities. Hi, Carol.
Hi, good morning. Well, I'm calling because I'm just a big fan of meatloaf, and I'm a huge fan of your book. I think meatloaf, I agree with so many points. It has been maligned over the years, and really there are a lot of top cooking shows and chefs that kind of disparage meatloaf, but not only is it bipartisan, but it's all over the country. You know, I have grown up and live in Minnesota. I have a cabin up in Wisconsin, and I always thought it was like a northern food, but it's really, at least in restaurants, exhibiting a comeback, because you see it in New Orleans, you see it in Florida, you see it out in very nice California restaurant. So it's really, I'm surprised. It's all over the country.
Yeah, do you see it all over the country?
What meatloaf do you like to cook, Carol?
Oops, I think...
favorite meatloaf is Italian sausage with pork and beef.
Ooh.
And I also, my tack on trying to restore meatloaf to the family dinner table is that I wrote a book on meatloaf about meatloaf outside the pan and not cooking it in a vessel, like you called it, but shaping it into different things, because I think meatloaf's been underachieving all these years by just settling for the loaf pan. You know, it's crammed in there. It looks like a brick.
Hey, Carol, have you ever seen, someone showed us, we did a segment for CBS this morning that I believe aired this morning, but when we were doing it, one of the people on the production team had put together a gallery of sort of meatloaf through the ages and showed us a picture. You were talking about different shapes and outside the pan, showed us a picture of a meatloaf that was shaped like an igloo, and the blocks of ice were evoked by rectangles of mashed potato around it. Have you ever seen that?
No, I haven't, but I'm glad when you were talking, that's so cool. When you were talking about chicken, I made a Trump loaf and a Hillary loaf, and I made Trump out of ground turkey with pureed carrots to give him that orange hue. And
that is awesome.
His hair was
also healthy.
Hair pasta. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And Hillary,
someone the other day, Carol, suggested to us, someone who is obviously not a Trump fan, suggested that maybe a Trump loaf should be bologna with Russian dressing. And
my goodness.
Clever idea.
Wait, though, Carol, what did you make Hillary's meatloaf out of?
Wisconsin's a Trump state, remember. Yes, Hillary was made out of chicken. And I used white bread instead of breadcrumbs to keep it a light pallor. And then I used for her rouge beet juice.
Oh, my goodness.
Beet juice.
And mashed potatoes with mustard in them for Hillary's hair. But Donald's hair was the angel hair pasta. And, boy, it looked like $1 million.
Oh, my goodness. I mean,
people recognize these loaves as these politicians? Did they instantly say, and that's Hillary loaf?
Oh, yeah.
Remember the Seinfeld episode with Fusilli Jerry? That's what I'm thinking of right now.
Yeah, right.
Well,
that
by the
so
way,
good.
Just one more thing on vessels, by the way. Did you also know that sometimes people make meatloafs in a bundt pan?
Yes,
this
I
is
have
something
heard
else.
Of that. And
in the book, we have several recipes for meatloaf muffins, which is a great invention because you just make the batter the same way. You put it in muffin tins, and then you either have, you know, kind of with two muffins, make a serving, three muffins, or you actually have something that, you know, before we did this book and thought deeper, more deeply about meatloaf, we didn't think was possible, and you may not think is possible, but meatloaf as canapé.
Oh, my goodness. No. Carol, thank you so much for the call. How amazing that she wrote her own book and is so involved in meatloaf. And she thinks it's making a huge comeback and that it's available on restaurants nationwide. Are you seeing that comeback, Frank?
I have not seen meatloaf on many menus, to be honest with you. But, I mean, you know, I don't. This is a big country, 50 states. I don't get to all of them that frequently. I'm waiting to see more meatloaf on restaurant menus. You know, one of the great compliments that was paid to Jennifer and me when the book was coming out is there's actually a restaurant here in New York called the Nomad Bar in Manhattan on 28th Street near Broadway. And they actually, for the next month, have three of the meatloaves from the book on the menu. They serve them as slices in these beautiful Staub cast iron cooking vessels, and they also have three sides. But with the exception of what they're doing there, I'm waiting for the meatloaf moment, as I said.
Well, here we have Daryl in Madison, who apparently has a restaurant that features meatloaf. Hi, Daryl.
Hi.
Yes, so
yeah, we do.
Tell us about your meatloaf, Daryl.
Yeah, I am in Madison, and I own the Daisy Cafe and Cupcakery, and we have featured meatloaf for 8 years now. And
kind of meatloaf do you serve?
Yeah, we do single-serving portions, and that we've got anything from a more basic ground beef and bacon with carrots, onions. But from there, that was just the starter so anybody could get involved with it. But after that, we've done chicken and gorgonzola and leek. We've done turkey, pesto, and feta. We've done chorizo.
Oh, wow, wonderful pesto. That's great.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's really good with that one. And then a chorizo and pepper jack and Anaheim peppers. And most recently, we added a Reuben meatloaf. So just like you guys were talking about before, you can take a regular, you know, a familiar concept, and all the ingredients that go into a Reuben can go into a meatloaf just reconstituted.
That's awesome.
You're just making Frank's point. You're exactly right. Any dish that is a delicious dish can somehow be rethought of And I love this idea of pesto. Did you say that was with your chicken or your turkey?
That was with the turkey. Turkey, feta, and
turkey.
Pesto. Yeah.
That sounds fantastic. I want to try that.
We've
you know, feta is a cheese that just works so... It's funny, you mentioned two cheeses that make multiple appearances in our meatloaves, feta, and you say gorgonzola. We have blue cheese in different guises, but both of those cheeses, as you clearly know, any blue cheese that's soft enough in feta are so, so great in meatloaves.
It gives that moisture, doesn't it? Yep.
Moisture and salt. You know, it really
exactly.
kind of gives up salt in a great way.
Daryl, I'll see you at Daisy's because that sounds really good. You know, in fact, speaking of cheese, you do talk about cheese in the book. You say that cheese is your ally. And, of course, here in Wisconsin, we should probably get that on a T-shirt. But, in fact, what did I have? Provolone. Provolone cheese is what I put on that tuna melt. And, again, it was very good. So we should put cheese in lots of different meatloaves.
I mean, just as cheese is wonderful on a turkey sandwich, chicken sandwich, we like cheese on cheeseburgers. I mean, again, it's the perfect component to a meatloaf. And as Frank pointed out, you know, the with ground meat, you do want a certain amount of salt content. And it's really nice to be able to get that from something other than your salt shaker, to get it from certain kinds of cheeses, Parmesan, pecorino. I actually prefer pecorino to Parmesan in many things. And it just really integrates nicely when it cooks. I think chefs agree.
Yeah, we have Gary from Iron River who suggests using rolled oats as the binder. He says it works well and is healthier than bread or cracker crumbs. My mom used to put rolled oats in.
Yeah, that's one whole tradition of binders. And there are other ones. I mean, we have a loaf that we love, a turkey loaf, in the book that's probably of the meatloaves the healthiest, and it uses farro as a binder, which... You know, again, really kind of kicks up the health content in terms of fiber, in terms of even a little bit of different source of protein. We kind of go in both directions with the binder, in healthy directions like what Gary was suggesting, and also we go in some very unhealthy directions. We have one meatloaf that uses crushed potato chips as a binder. and it is not the one that you want to eat when you're watching your waistline, but it is one that you want to eat regardless.
You know,
the thing about oats, by the way, that I like about them, and you could, if you had a recipe for breadcrumbs and you wanted to use oats, it's very neutral. You know, so whatever you're doing, it's a great just blank palate as a binder.
Right. Unlike there was a kind of meatloaf tradition of cornflakes as a binder, and those are a little bit more aggressive. So you really want to think about, is the flavor of cornflakes something I want to be part of the particular thing I'm putting together? Whereas Jennifer says rolled oats are much, much more retiring.
We are talking with Frank Bruni and Jennifer Steinhauer. They are the co-authors of A Meatloaf in Every Oven, Two Chatty Cooks, One Iconic Dish, and Dozens of Recipes from Moms to Mario Batali's. So what's your favorite meatloaf recipe? Or do you have a question about making a great meatloaf? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
Hey, good looking. What you got cooking? How's about cooking something up with
me? So when's the last time you cooked up a meatloaf? We're talking about this this classic comfort food, at least to some, and elevating this classic comfort food with our two guests who are the co-authors of the new book, A Meatloaf in Every Oven. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. What do you like in your meatloaf? Let's go next to Sina in Platteville. Hi, Sina.
Hi, Joy. How are you?
I'm good. I understand you have you're a chef and you make a vegan loaf.
So I'm a chef at Drickens Market in Platteville, and we're calling in because coincidentally we're serving it today.
Oh, cool.
Our meatloaf is lentil based and it's vegan. So our binder we use flaxseed and rolled oats, soak it in water, and then we season it. And the secret I think is in the sauce. It's ketchup, maple syrup, and balsamic vinegar.
All right.
And then,
what was the binder again? I didn't catch the binder.
Flaxseed. Flaxseed and rolled oats. You know,
oh, interesting. And do you make that in a loaf pan, or do you do that out in an open pan?
Oh, we make it in a... a loaf pan and then several loaf pans, and then we cut it up for a single serving.
All right.
Great.
Yeah, so why did you decide to go to make a vegan meatless meatloaf, Sina?
So part of our mission at Driftless Market is to focus on vegetarian and vegan first. We do serve meat options also, but we want to make sure that everybody has something to eat and that everybody can eat vegetarian, not everybody can eat meat. It's more sustainable for the environment. So we just wanted to put a different spin on things, and it tastes really good.
Thank you so much. I know we've mentioned this before that there are meatless meatloaf recipes in the book, including I think you have one. I picked the tuna one, but there is a completely vegetarian one using, I think it was zucchini, wasn't it, Jennifer?
Yes, that's a great recipe from a chef named Daniel Patterson, who has a restaurant in San Francisco that is not completely, but principally vegetarian. He does all these exciting things with the vegetables. This is a non-meatloaf that is best made, when summer squash is in season, and you grate it. So that becomes almost the meat source, if you will. It also has lentils in it and pearl barley. So those could serve as the protein and also a binder at the same time. And it's absolutely delicious. And one thing I thought that was really fascinating about that loaf is it has Parmesan cheese in it, but also soy sauce, which I did not think of as a necessarily viable combination, but they work really well together.
It's funny because often when people are trying to explain, remember about 10 years ago when everyone started writing about umami and trying to explain what this fifth taste
yes.
was, they would often cite Parmesan and soy sauce as like classic agents of umami. So that's a loaf that's doubling down on its umami.
Here's a comment from a listener. My Polish grandma always made meatloaf, and it was one meat dish I didn't mind as a kid. My favorite part is that she put two hard-boiled eggs in the center. Mm-hmm. So with almost each slice, you got an egg slice.
Yep,
so how common is that?
We have one of those in our book as well. That's really fun to make. It's like putting an Easter egg hunt in your meatloaf. it's just I think, and it's interesting that the listener mentioned their roots, because I believe that is sort of an Eastern European classic. That's my memory that actually came when we were came to our attention when we were researching loaves and meatloaf style meals from other countries.
It was Eastern Europe, interestingly enough, and Colombia in South America was another place
that's
big on the eggs and meatloaf. So, I mean, again, it shows you just how ecumenical the meatloaf tradition is.
Let's see here. We got Kathy in Amberg is with us. Hi, Kathy.
Hello.
Yes, what's your secret for your meatloaf?
Well, I do have a secret for a meatloaf, but I laugh at the word binder. We called it a stretcher.
A stretcher.
My mother was the master of stretching. To make
binder's like a euphemism. It's a happier word, don't you think?
That's right.
And we also used soda crackers. Anything that was left over, my mother saved and could. Anything of a starch form, oats or crackers or bread, nothing was wasted. And it was the master of making things stretch. But what I found, a friend taught me this, and it was so much fun. It's sort of like the hidden egg. We would take an 8-ounce block of a solid cheese, like a sharp cheddar, and lay that in between a layer inside of the meatloaf. And then after you cook the meatloaf, you let it sit a half hour or so, so that sets back up and hardens. And when you slice it, everybody got a nice, orange slice of cheese in the center, and it was always fun for the kids.
Love
that
it.
Sounds fantastic. Are you still making that now?
No, because my husband and I are trying to watch our weight. But I do,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, there are meatloaves that are very, very pretty. There's we are fortunate enough to have meatloaves from a lot of prominent chefs in the book. They were extremely generous, and one of them is from Mario Batali, and he does his meatloaf in which he calls the stuffed meatloaf in a sort of Swiss roll fashion. So it's got a spiral when it comes out of the oven, and there again, as like the meatloaves that give you a circle of egg in the center, it takes meatloaf and it turns it into a visual experience as well as a gustatory one.
We have a caller, Mike in Green Bay, who has more information on the background of the boiled egg in the meatloaf. Hi, Mike.
Good morning.
Yes,
yeah,
go ahead, Mike.
I've been telling people this for years. I thought it was normal to have egg in the center of our meatloaf, and I didn't realize that there was a Polish lady that had commented earlier, my grandparents were Bohemian, and that was normal, and I thought everybody made meatloaf this way, and I'm disappointed when I don't have egg in the center. But the flavor that exchanges between the egg and the meatloaf is incredible, and I wish everybody would try this.
I think that's a great idea. It's also I think it's great for the texture, too, don't you? It's just a whole different thing when you bite into that.
It is. It's wonderful.
Yeah, we have Pam from Shell Lake, who in an email asks, we have 5 kinds of ground meat in our freezer, beef, lamb, pork, venison, and bear. Can they all be used in meatloaf?
Wow, I have to say my bear meat experience is limited, as in non-existent. I'm guessing, is bear meat very lean?
I think it is.
I've actually had bear meat in Alaska, and it is apparently taxonomically or zoologically, there is some relationship between the bear and the pig. And what it tasted like was very lean pork.
Okay.
So do you think that bear and pork would be a good combo?
Yes, I do. I think if one used those meats and just did bear and venison, you'd be in trouble because you'd have a very, very excessively lean meatloaf. But I think bear and pork would be perfect. I think venison and beef, actually, we've known people who've done that, and that's worked out very well. I can't remember. Was beef one of the meats in the freezer?
Yep, and beef and lamb and pork and venison and bear.
You know,
I would
lamb,
only caution against mixing the lamb.
Because lamb has such a distinctive flavor. We love, my favorite meat for meatloaf is lamb, and we have a whole chapter of the book that's just lamb meatloaf. But I think lamb is so distinctive in its flavor that I think you want it to play on its own patch of grass.
Okay, we have Geneva.
That's exactly right.
Geneva in Baraboo is our next caller. Hi, Geneva.
Well, good morning.
Hi.
Good morning, Geneva.
I make a stuffed meatloaf.
What do you stuff it with?
I make the basic meatloaf recipe, and then I put the meatloaf down like in a rectangle, and then I go to the deli, and I get some good deli ham and some sliced Swiss cheese, and I lay that down, and then you can roll it up, and while that's baking, I got my potatoes cooking, and I make mashed potatoes, take the meatloaf out, and frost it with the mashed potatoes, put it back in until it's nice and golden brown. Take it out. It's so nice to look at because it gets that nice little spiral look.
And I thought that was cute. Frost it with the
recipes like that, including one from Mario Batali, the famous chef, has a rolled meatloaf like that. And that it's, first of all, it's really fun to make, don't you think? It's like making a meat squished in a well.
Yes,
and
like
it does. It gives you a lot of flavors, textures, and it's very attractive when you cut it. You're right.
Yes, it is, and I get a lot of compliments on it. Everybody loves it. It's very good.
Thank you, Geneva, for calling. Frosting it with mashed potatoes sounded interesting, too. And it reminded me, we haven't really talked a lot about ketchup. Was that should we use ketchup on the top of our meatloaf or not?
I think Jennifer will agree with me. There are some meatloaf that call for it, and it works out really well, but I think in the annals of meatloaf cookery, ketchup has played way too bullying and prominent a role to date.
I think that's true. Now, I will say last night I made my ricotta meatloaf, which was sort of one of my staples, and put a little ketchup on the top, and it does kind of give it a little zing. I mean, ketchup, I do agree it's overplayed. It doesn't work very well with poultry at all, and certainly not lamb. But sometimes with beef, it does give a nice little salt and zing to it.
Jean in Delafield is with us now. Hi, Jean.
Hi. What I do is when I'm making a meatloaf, I take my blender out and I throw my egg, my milk, my ketchup, my onion, all my seasonings in the blender.
How come you don't want to smush that up with your hands, Jean?
It's a lot easier, and I use oatmeal in my meatloaf also. So I just put my oatmeal in with my meat, throw in all my stuff from the blender, and shape it and put it in a pan and bake it.
All right. Well,
great. Sounds very classic.
Yep. Thank you, Jean. Jennifer, gets, do you like mashing it together with your hands if you're doing that classic hamburger one?
We do kind of think that your hands tend to be the best way to make meatloaf. Yeah. Once in a while, I'll use my standing mixer at a very slow speed. That's a good way to mix it, that you can get over mixing. I mean, your hands, you really get in, you really feel for yourself and see that it's and see the things are incorporated. And frankly, Frank thinks that's the joy of making meatloaf, is using your hands.
I do, and I hasten to add that, you know, do clean hands. I mean, I'm when I'm making meatloaf, I'm constantly washing my hands. But I think it makes it more fun. But I also think, as Jennifer said, sometimes with certain fish meatloaves that are closer almost to terrines, you want to use a standing mixer or something like a blender or a Cuisinart. But more often than not, you don't want your meatloaf to be a perfectly even paste, because that's sort of the antithesis of meatloaf. You want it to have, I kind of think of it like you want it to have a little bit of the patchwork quilt quality of food, because that evokes the nostalgia, the hominess, all of that.
Jim and Larson is with us now. Hi, Jim.
Good morning. I do a salmon loaf, meatloaf.
A salmon loaf, okay.
Salmon loaf, yeah. Eggs, and you can use whatever you want, texture in there. I usually use a little bit of bread in there, bread crumbs, lemon.
Celery. Lemon, interesting, uh-huh, great.
Oh, yeah, lemon, celery, and then I'll pack the pan about two-thirds full of salmon. Then I will put in, I'll have all the almond stuff mixed in there. But I'll pack the pan about two-thirds full, and then I'll layer Swiss cheese, and then finish it off with salmon on top again.
Ooh, so you're stuffing some cheese in there, too. There is a salmon loaf, meatloaf, in the book. I almost did that yesterday, but I didn't have every ingredient on hand, so I didn't. What do you think of the salmon meatloaf, Frank?
Well, I mean, it just proves the point. Anything can take on the form and the shape of a meatloaf. And the salmon loaf in the book actually comes courtesy of Melissa Clark, who's a friend of ours and the kind of featured chief recipe writer in the New York Times' food section. She's terrific. And, you know, anything that comes out of Melissa's kitchen is something you want to pay careful attention to.
Yeah. Let's. We have just a couple of minutes left. I think we can fit a call or two in. Tom in Brookfield. Hi, Tom.
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good. What's your question?
I have a comment, because you talk about all kinds of meatloafs, and I am a big fan of meatloaf myself. I've been doing meatloafs for roughly 46 years, and they come a long ways with actually meatloaf pans. And years ago when I used to make a meatloaf, because I never could make anything small, I would use my wife's great big Bundt cake pan.
Yeah.
And that thing would be full. You know, I think it would be 3-4 pounds. And when you're always done cooking, you always have a meatloaf sitting in more or less a pool of grease. Well, now with these meatloaf pans, there were the drain holes in the bottom. They turn out absolutely perfect.
Thank you, Tom. We have just a minute or so to go. Jennifer, do you have a new meatloaf pans are phenomenal?
I have not seen those meatloaf pans in the drain. That's very interesting, but that is a reason that we like to make meatloaf in a cast iron pan or in a large, or like a cookie sheet, because that grease or the sauce, you know, pools in the pan. You can make a sauce out of that if you want, or you can discard it as he suggested.
Yeah. In our final minute, Frank, any final thought on meatloaf that you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, I would just like to reemphasize that when you're talking about meatloaf, that word meat can take you in so many different directions. And if you gave up on meatloaf early on because all you ever had was a beef meatloaf or a pork beef meatloaf whose principal seasoning was ketchup, you were not done meatloaf justice in your life. And you really owe yourself a second look at meatloaf.
And Jennifer, 30 seconds, a final takeaway from you?
I would like to go back to the notion of meatloaf binding our nation and our need for things to be bipartisan, and certainly a food that we can share across class lines, across cultural lines, across political lines. Meatloaf truly, I do believe, is the bound of our nation.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. Thank you both very much for being with us. Frank Bruni, Jennifer Steinhauer, co-authors of A Meatloaf in Every Oven. Thanks to Brian Shasso and to Marika Suval for producing the program. This is the Ideas Network.
Like it's made by your mother, talking about meatloaf.